Relax, Worrywart. Take a load off. Huh? Enjoy yourself. You know what I just discovered recently? Podcasts. There's like a billion of them, and they just keep coming. Now, Scoot, I got a new radio lab to listen to about how clams learn.
Pretty excited.
February 4th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm car salesman Chip Hessenflut.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Car salesman, huh?
Well, Steve, this car would look great on you.
I am in the market, Chip. Yeah. I am in the market for a car, so I've come to the right place.
I've got a plaid jacket on, and I'm ready to tell you about the deal.
Eugene Levy? Are you Eugene Levy right now? Is this vacation?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. You don't want that one.
That's right.
You want the family truckster.
If I was going to cross the country, I would probably have this family truckster here.
I'm looking for a car that is very fuel efficient. I'm putting solar panels on the roof. We haven't talked about this on the air. I'm putting solar panels on the roof of my house. So I'm looking for a car with a big battery so I can take the energy from the sun and use that to drive.
Well, that'll work, Steve. There's lots of cars out there doing that now.
Well, the auto show is coming up in Chicago this week, so I can...
Chicago Auto Show.
Chicago Auto Show. Come on down. Make sure you get some checkers on your jacket and come on down to Chicago Auto Show.
Chicago.
It is opening this week. February 7th is the Black Tie First Look for Charity. Which we don't go to.
No?
I do have a tuxedo. I take that back. I do have a tuxedo.
Well, Steve, we wear it every weekend when we record. Of course we do.
Those are the fancy people, Chip. The ones who are paying $300 a head to go look at the auto show.
Well, Steve, if we're going to go to this, I'll have to get it cleaned.
Yeah?
Yes. Because the only thing I have left is my Dumb and Dumber tuxedo.
Mine's the orange one.
But Terry Gard telling you, you guys are fabulous.
I do plan on going to the auto show this year. I don't go every year, but I go when I'm in the market for a car. And this is one of those years. So maybe I'll make my way down to the McCormick Place this week.
Before we get started, let's go ahead and thank the Super Bowl. I mean, what an incredible game, Steve.
Yes, the Super Bowl. That marvelous bowl. I can't wait to see the spoon that comes with it.
Well, I was going to say the team in red won. It was a great game.
Team in red.
Yeah, the halftime show was incredible.
You know, I support SF.
What?
Steve Fodor.
That's, of course.
That's the team.
Oh, that's right.
Right? They love me in San Francisco. I have pictures of all sorts of memorabilia. I heart SF. I'm like, this is my place. Finally, SF gets to go to the Super Bowl.
Well, the game was played last Sunday.
Oh, and I missed it already.
Well, Steve, of course. We had our Kansas City barbecue.
Yeah.
We had our Ghirardelli chocolates. We were supportive.
Yeah.
And we watched that great game in the halftime. That was incredible.
I Shakira and J-Lo, yeah. Give me that any day of the week.
So what a fun time, and congratulations to the winner.
Yes, the winner of that game. How amazing that they won.
That was great.
That way. That's how we talk podcast on a Tuesday.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week.
Steve, that's not a movie. This is not a movie. This is not a movie.
Here's the thing, boys and girls. I have a podcast where we do a movie of the week and a book of the week, and I don't see movies hardly ever. But what I do see is I watch a lot of TV. And yes, this week, the end of the TV show The Good Place happened on NBC. The series finale, four seasons of this sitcom.
This stars Sam Malone.
Yes, Ted Danson is one of the two stars of this show.
Does he still sling beer?
There was one scene in The Good Place where he was behind a bar and serving beers. Yes, that was certainly a nod to Cheers. Kristen Bell is really the protagonist of The Good Place. The story of The Good Place is this young lady...
From Frozen.
That Kristen Bell, America's sweetheart Kristen Bell. She plays Eleanor Shellstrup. She passes away and goes to the good place in the first episode of this show.
To heaven.
Well, they never actually said that word anywhere in the series. But yes, the implication is one of the ideas of what happens to you after you die is maybe you would go to heaven, the good place, where everything's perfect and you have everything you need and it's just sheer bliss and joy for all of eternity. Then the rest of the story happens. And spoilers... I'm going to give spoilers on this TV show that's been on for 4 years, but it turns out that she wasn't in the good place, that this was all the bad place, and she was being tortured.
H-E double toothpick, Steve?
Because she knew she was not supposed to be in the good place, and this was the newest form of torture formulated by the demons from the bad place.
Well, so she's in... H-E double toothpicks.
Okay, they never said that word in this show either.
All right, so what we have is a series that over the first three seasons explored that. I guess the fourth season explored it too.
Yeah.
But it ends, and there's a, you know...
There is a logical end to this conversation.
So we actually have a bow at the end.
Yes. This is one of those rare sitcoms where there is a beginning, a middle, and end to this story.
Blackadder.
Blackadder's coming back, so that's not one of the ones that has a logical ending. Yes, they are making new episodes of Blackadder, and the entire cast from the original Blackadder is back.
Is it really?
Yes, sir. Oh, I look forward to that. This is the genius of Mike Schur, who you might know from The Office, the U.S. version of The Office, Parks and Rec.
Michael Scott. Great Scott.
Parks and Rec was all out of the mind of Michael Schur. Brooklyn Nine-Nine and The Good Place. These are four sitcoms that actually have something to say.
So he's on fire, Steve.
This is a silly sitcom about moral philosophy, also known as ethics. The idea of studying what you should do morally, what good you can do, and what you can do that's wrong, and what are the consequences of those actions, both on Earth and, in this case, in the afterlife.
So what did we determine?
Well, at the end of the series, they turn away from the moral philosophy toward the Eastern theory of spirituality and the Buddhist idea of reincarnation, going through it again and again and again. And then they wrap it up in a nice way at the end where you have the opportunity, even after you've died, to make a moral choice to either stay in heaven forever or to exit heaven and become a part of the universe again.
So they basically follow Belinda Carlisle. Heaven is a place on earth.
No, I wouldn't say that. This is very philosophical. This is mind-boggling that this show made it on TV and stayed on for as long as it did. Four seasons of moral ideals and philosophers and Kant and Socrates and all of this discussion, all culminating with a moral judgment of what are you doing? Are you doing the right things? And what is your motivation to do good in this life? It's amazing. If you haven't seen The Good Place, I really strongly recommend it. This is from NBC, so it's on Hulu. You can go back and watch. It's about 19 hours from start to finish, the four seasons. And there's some pretty amazing, wacky stuff that happens. It's very funny. The characters are wonderful. Every one of the actors in this is now...
Woody...
No, Woody never showed up.
Coach.
No, Coach is definitely in the good place. William Jackson Harper plays Cheedy. He is stunning. I look forward to whatever he is going to do next. Jamila Jamil, who is, this was her first acting job. She was never in front of the camera doing anything acting-wise. She was doing a talk show in Britain before this. She did fantastic. Darcy Carden, who is Janet, the AI in the Good Place, she stole so many of the scenes because her acting ability is phenomenal. But Manny Jacinto, who plays Jason Mendoza, is quite possibly the funniest actor working in sitcoms right now. His original storyline was that he was a monk, a Buddhist monk who was not able to speak, and when he dies and goes to the Good Place, he's still not speaking. But then about 10 episodes in, they discover that he's not a Buddhist monk. He's a guy from Jacksonville, Florida, and he's really dumb. He's the dumb character. He's the Woody character.
Yes.
And his moral arc in this is the most fascinating, because essentially he becomes the monk that he originally was supposed to be by living thousands of years alone in the woods at the end of the series, and just comes to these moral philosophy ideals and engages in them and becomes amazing. I look forward to what Mike Schur is going to do next. I'm sure it's going to be great. I recommend The Good Place highly, even though it's not a movie. It's okay. The cast and crew did a weekly podcast to discuss every episode, and I really highly recommend that you go and download all of those podcasts as a primer to understand what they were trying to say in each of these episodes. This is the deepest sitcom that I've ever seen.
This sounds like a lot of work, Steve.
It is a lot of work. That is moral philosophy. You've discovered moral philosophy, Chip. It's a lot of work, and you have to understand you want to do it in order to achieve your goals. There you go. That's The Good Place on NBC. You got a chance to see a movie called Autonomy. Tell us about that.
It's based on the work of Malcolm Gladwell, and we know him as one of our, pop thinkers of today. And he's basically asking if our relationship to the automobile, he feels it's getting ready to change dramatically over the next, 10, 15, 20 years, where a car in many ways is this, it was freedom, Steve. I mean, think about, we had trains and they could take you where they were going. We had boats, they would take you where you're going. But automobiles, especially when the network that was created allowed you to jump on your horse and travel where you wanted to go. It really was amazing. But it seems like we're getting ready to have a revolution with electric vehicles and then vehicles that self-drive you where you want to go. Well, that relationship could change, and what implications it could also have on society. This is a study of sort of the future, or a predicted future, and a little bit of the thought that's going along with it. This is nice, not great. Certainly 50 out of 100, I would say. If you have interest in where you're kind of a futurist type of person, this is kind of a good place to start.
I'm sure there's going to be some interesting stuff at the auto show where they're going to be talking about the self-driving, some of the things that we can do today with self-driving. I wouldn't buy a car right now without a really good automated cruise control. I want cruise control that can sense things around me so that I'm just a little bit safer.
Well, I disagree, Steve. I enjoy the drive.
I don't enjoy the drive.
And I don't even use the... but you know what? For people who enjoy it, in fact, that was one of these studies that we talk about in this movie. The idea of you getting into the car and taking your trip down to St. Louis. Okay, you're out on the open road. But that's not your experience. That's not most people's experience. You know, they grab their car and they're going to go downtown Chicago. And that drive is, I mean, I went downtown this week for a meeting. And I left and I sat in traffic for a long period of time. And basically getting to Chicago for a meeting and back, that's almost your whole day.
Yeah.
And that's not really what many people are thinking about with automobiles. And, you know, self-driving cars may be able to speed that up quite a bit.
Or give you the flexibility to do something else while you're moving your body.
Exactly. And I think there's where it's going. So this idea of what your expectation of an automobile could change dramatically. And part of it's because our experience that we kind of dream up in your mind of you take the your sports car and you head out to the open plains. No, no, no. Most of us are sitting in traffic somewhere.
And that's where the AI can help, can take over the monotony of that. Anything that's repetitive, AI can take care of those repetitive tasks because they're pretty simple. There's a pretty easy programming if and then there. We talk about this in class all the time.
I don't want to underestimate. This is truly complicated. But I think part of it is dumbing down how we use our roads, which means all that space that we're using for parking and mm-hmm. and roads, that could change dramatically too. So cities could change dramatically over the next 100 years too.
We could make a part of the road that is just for the automated vehicles and a part of the road that is for those manual drives when you want to, that adventure of driving.
Steve, I saw Blade Runner. I know where there things are going.
There you go. I saw Total Recall with the Johnny Cabs. That's where I think it's going. That's where I think we're headed. You also got to see Ray Harryhausen, the special effects titan. This is a documentary from 2011.
So for 9 years, this has sat in my queue to watch this. And I, instead of going to the theater this week, I actually sat and watched this.
Wow.
And so Ray Harryhausen is a person that we're very aware of. In fact, his influence on movies cannot be underestimated. Mm-hmm. Most of us have seen King Kong.
Right.
And when he saw King Kong as a young boy, it really inspired him to go out and learn the craft of stop motion animation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you may have seen Nightmare Before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a number of Tim Burton movies. Maybe you saw a movie called Star Wars
mm-hmm.
Or Empire Strikes Back. And they used this stop motion to, I mean, that same technique.
Yes.
Now, this is how he developed this. He developed this when he was a young kid. He said, oh, I like that. I'd like to learn how to do that. So he started making his own stop motion pictures. Mom and dad would make costumes. They would help set up props, whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
so that he could have this fun. And so when he went to Hollywood and said, I'd like to do this, he already had the skill, at least the beginning part of it. One of the other discussions in this movie was that Ray Harryhausen film many times was his vision. And because he did most of the work, if not all the work in the early ones, he worked with a small team.
Mm-hmm.
So what was fascinating about it is when you were seeing a film, you really were seeing an artist's view of how this should be put together. They talk a little bit about how they take these animated characters, they put them in real life situations.
Mm-hmm.
They give you the technique of doing that. They discuss a little bit. And then there's a whole group of people who just basically just want to gush all over him and tell him what a wonderful guy he is. This is a fascinating film on filmmaking and the art of taking your skills and bringing it to the world.
Mm-hmm.
He is very lucky. He had this opportunity. When I watched this when I was a young kid, saw his work, mm-hmm. I always thought it was kind of dated and old school.
Yeah.
But you get real appreciation of just how far ahead of the curve he was. And while, yes, right now, if you saw a Pixar film or saw a modern film, most of the time, you're not seeing a single artist putting their vision in. They've got massive teams. ILM.
Around the world, yeah.
Yeah, ILM, which George Lucas created.
Yeah.
You know, has this...
Changed everything.
Sure, it changed it, but you know, it's... Very few of us could go, oh yeah, that's John's work, and that's Fred's work. And
but you can see Ray Harryhausen's work for sure. My first introduction to his work was Clash of the Titans,
sure,
1980s. That was his last film as the visual effects guy.
Sure.
And yes, there is definitely that. Remember Evil Dead, Army of Darkness, where they did a Ray Harryhausen-esque stop motion animation because he was so influential on how special effects got started in the movies.
Absolutely.
Starting in the 1940s. Brilliant. Brilliant guy. I would like to see this. I will probably watch this one.
Find out how they get the skeletons to actually work with the actors. The actors would work. So you and I would work on our own fighting skills.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm getting ready to film, they would move me out. So you and I have practiced 10 or 12 times. I move out. You still do the same movements, and then eventually they add the skeleton as a stop motion which is an itty-bitty one, but they show you how he does it. It certainly is fascinating. We could recreate it if we had desire to create that type of film.
And he did a voice in the movie Elf in 2003, and he had a cameo in the movie Spies Like Us in 1994. How about that?
Mr. Norwell.
That's awesome. All right. You also got to see The Informant. This is...
From 2009, Steve.
Yeah, you're going back into the archives this week, huh?
Well, this was always on my list of movies to see, and I am so sad I did not see this movie a long, long time ago. Steve, we live in Illinois.
Yes, we do.
And this is a movie that's about ADM, mm-hmm. Supermarket to the World.
Yes.
Down in Decatur, Illinois. And this is a beautiful movie. And Matt Damon, you go into this film, and my hope is you don't know a lot about it, but I'm getting ready to spoil most of it for you. I'm sorry. You go in and you have this character by Matt Damon's playing.
Matt Damon.
And this guy is brilliant. He's a brilliant guy. He's got this inner dialogue that kind of plays throughout the film. It's a stream of consciousness of random facts.
Uh-huh.
And it's just wild where it's always coming in. He's always wondering something.
Uh-huh.
Like, where do the butterflies come from? And this is as you're going through the scenes. Fascinating.
I've never met anybody like that, Chip.
I know. It's incredible. I know. And so he's making a lot of money. You know, he's probably making $250,000 a year.
Okay, working at ADM.
So there's this point where he ends up getting a raise, like a $100,000 raise. And so things are really, really going well with him. But somehow, this one project he's working on is not going as well as he needs it to go on.
Okay.
And so they get this random call from Japan. And it seems like there is a Japanese scientist who's figured out what's going on. Steve, there's a mole in ADM mm-hmm. that is sabotaging their studies.
Sabotage.
So sabotaging the studies. And so he goes and informs the bosses about it. And anyway, this Japanese scientist is demanding $10 million. So the response of that is like, well... see if you can negotiate it down a little bit. They're just going to pay it.
Uh-huh.
And so he's like, okay. And so this ends up all taking place. They eventually, ADM, when that happens, calls in the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow. So now we've got Matt Damon's character, this real-life person
uh-huh.
who's now intrigued that he's got the FBI working with him. And then he starts talking about price fixing. He becomes the mole.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he's uncovering... bad things ADM's doing. So the whole time I'm thinking, this is a movie about bad things ADM have done.
Yeah.
And because they have, if you don't know who ADM is.
Daniels Midland.
Yeah, but if you go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
Chances are any food that uh-huh. you're picking up probably has been touched by this company.
Especially if it has corn in it or a corn product, because almost all of the American food has a corn product and almost all of it's from ADM.
And it could be cleaning, could be any type uh-huh. of thing. They just have this just incredible
mm-hmm.
power of the market. Well, that's fascinating. Well, anyway, he starts exposing all the underbelly of ADM.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cartel working, there's a conspiracy, the price fix. The FBI agents are totally eating this up.
Mm-hmm.
And am I going to go ahead and just...
Go for it. This is almost 10 years old. I think everybody who's seen it has seen it, and everybody else, go for it.
Well, I think this is a great movie. You should really see it. I think it's just so fascinating.
Then don't spoil it.
Well, the point being... Well, I am going to spoil it.
Okay.
The point is that you can actually... You can look up the real-life version.
Right.
And while this is a comedy...
Yeah.
The real life version is also, it's equally as fascinating. Ultimately, we figure out that the FBI agents figure out as they are totally watching this guy fumble through gathering information on their behalf to indict ADM.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, they determine that he's lying to them. Like Matt Damon's character has been lying to them the entire time.
Uh-huh.
And he's just eating up this whole point. And you realize his entire life is made up of lies. Now, this is a guy that grew up in Ohio that said he was adopted and got into an Ivy League school. And he goes, well, I told him that because there's sympathy to adopted people to get into Ivy League schools, and this was allowed me to get there, which allowed him to get his jobs, which allowed him to get to ADM, which allowed him to build this family, blah, 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 blah. It just builds upon itself. And here's the point. You never really know if he's releasing all the information. The FBI agents warn him the entire time, get your own attorney. Stop releasing information to us. And he just keeps going. And it's just, he just puts a noose around his neck and just pulls and pulls and pulls and pulls until he's the one just getting himself in trouble. Mm-hmm. Eventually, he goes to jail.
Yeah.
Now, the FBI are very, very happy that they were able to uncover this with ADM. The FBI agents were kind of sympathetic to him. And really, really sympathetic to him because Matt Damon's character thinks he's going to be CEO because he's the only one who knows the information beyond who the people who he thinks are going to go to jail.
Until they figure out that it's all made up.
Well, a couple of the ADM guys actually did go to jail for 3 years or so. But anyway, Matt Damon's character ended up going to... this real-life person went to jail for 9 years, Steve.
Wow.
9 years. And during that time, he got his JD, so like a master's of law.
Okay.
Okay. He got maybe a couple of graduate degrees while he was there. Like I said, he's brilliant. And he's giving this exit interview at the end of the movie where he's just saying, hey, listen, I'm really sorry about this. You know, I'm glad of what we're able to do. He goes, I just don't understand how I got 9 years and these other people who did bad things only got 3. He goes, I'm the mole that allowed this to happen. And the $9 million that I embezzled during it, because we found out he was embezzling money. Well, you didn't know it was $9 million. It started out $50,000 and it kept moving up. Anyway, he agreed when he went to jail that it was $7 million. When he's getting out, he's telling him it's $9 million. And the FBI agent calls him out. He goes, $9 million? This guy is a chief operating officer of a company out in California right now.
Wow.
If he's not retired. But the deal is this is just, I mean, this is such a great film. You're sitting there watching this going, you're thinking it's just going to be a kind of comedy. Mm-hmm. You're watching this guy kind of squirrel his way through everything.
Yeah.
And then you get this twist that you're going, what?
What?
He's lying to us?
Wow.
Fun, fun movie. I would say 75 out of 100.
Wow. This one was made for you, Chip. This is your kind of movie for sure. Stacy saw her kind of movie. She saw Dracula, which was on the BBC on New Year's, and it's now available on Netflix.
Hi, everyone. This week I'm talking about Dracula, which has been shown on BBC One and is also on Netflix for everybody outside the UK. So a little over a year since it was announced, it's just been shown in full on BBC One, where it was given a primetime slot on the New Year's festivities. I've been looking forward to this from the first mention because it's Dracula, made by the guys who make Sherlock. That was obviously going to be quite exciting. But I'm afraid to say, having watched all 3 episodes, that Dracula simply didn't have enough bite for me. Some have mentioned it being a homage to Hammer Horror, and as someone who grew up on those classics, I think they're being very, very kind with that comparison and potentially pushing it a little bit. The first part was good. They did go heavy on the cheese for the count lines for sure. Such moments as I don't drink wine inspired a groan, but all in all, it was nicely paced, enjoyable to watch. Then came part 2, which felt detached from part 1 until the end, where there was a slightly hasty attempt to tie the whole thing together that kind of worked, but felt like it was a bit of a last-minute idea. And I did enjoy getting to see everyone's favourite character, Sister Agatha Van Helsing, who deserves her own spin-off detective show and is now the only way I can picture Van Helsing. Honestly, the actress that played her is fantastic, and I'm going to be checking her out in anything she's done since then. Part 3. Well, Part 3 was the mess I heard it was. Not only in taking the move to the present day, but in the ridiculous things the humans were doing. Top tip, guns don't work, oh Dracula, so why are you pointing them at him? It was inept at best and downright befuddling at worst. Obviously, I don't want to spoil this for anyone who hasn't watched it yet, but the ending left me feeling a bit lost and annoyed. The things that you want from this just weren't there, unfortunately. It feels like the makers ran out of steam halfway through part 2 and just kind of came up with any old thing to make the runtime, whilst piling on more cheese to make up for it. That wine line I mentioned, by this point it felt like they were trying to make this into some sort of catchphrase for him, which he really didn't need. He's the Prince of Darkness, not a game show host. And honestly, I was having none of that. The whole series trades so far from the original text, and mostly in the worst ways, leaving many questions unanswered, which went a long way to making this adaptation so muddled. It is a shame because the show had the budget and the cast to be something memorable, but this is nothing like Moffat's heyday, I'm afraid. If you're looking for creepy, funny darkness based on a classic, I implore you to go and find his Jekyll miniseries instead, which was absolutely superb, and why I had such high hopes for this. As always, if you want to hear more ramblings about film, geekery and more, you can follow me on Twitter at @FilmsWithStacey, where you can also find a link to my website for longer film and TV reviews. Until next time.
Thanks, Stacey. Thanks for adding some reviews this year. It's been great having your voice on the show. Opening this week, we've got some movies. The Birds of Prey. Oh, wait, this says Birds of Prey. I thought it was called Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey.
Well, Steve, some Oracle was trying to tell me something.
I heard from Oracle. Oracle said she was not going to be a part of the Birds of Prey movie.
But Margot Robbie is, Steve.
Yes, this is definitely the vehicle for Harley Quinn after the Suicide Squad, after the success of that movie, which was marginal at best. But they saw that she was the highlight of that film. They are making her the star of the Birds of Prey story.
And the stars, Black Canary, mm-hmm. Huntress, and Renee Montoya.
Yes, played by Rosie Perez.
You kill my father, prepare to
That's
die.
That's a different Montoya. This is Renee Montoya, the detective who was first introduced in Batman the Animated Series along with Harley Quinn. And she is the first openly gay character in the DC universe of films. So we're gonna see some interesting storyline here, but I don't know what it is, because this is very different from the Birds of Prey that I'm used to. The Birds of Prey that has been in the comics and on TV in the past focused on Batgirl, Oracle, Barbara Gordon. She is not in this story whatsoever. So I look forward to seeing what this is going to look like.
Renee Montoya, prepare to die. Is there going to be sword fighting in this?
There might be sword fighting.
There you go.
A lot of hammers.
Steve, are there any scary movies for me?
Yes. The Lodge is your scary movie of the week. This is a soon-to-be stepmom who was removed from a cult that everybody died but her, and now she's got some memories coming
Steve,
back.
Steve, she's going to get married.
Yeah, it's joyous,
and
right?
She's decided she's going to the husband-to-be.
Uh-huh.
She's going to take her kids away, or his kids away for the weekend and spend some time. Bye. With them
in a lodge in the winter where the power goes out and the cell phones go out immediately, because that's how you have to write a horror movie in 2020.
Well, Steve, I've seen The Shining. I don't think anything Shining. Anything can come any good can come from this.
Nothing good can come from this. This looks scary. If you're into scary movies, then that is your movie of the week.
Well, I guess they will share an adventure together. They'll never forget.
Right. And Base Under Siege.
Lots of therapy after this one.
Yeah. There is a movie called And Then We Danced. This is from Georgia. You know how they make a lot of movies in Georgia.
A lot of Marvel movies are made in Georgia, Steve.
No. This is the other Georgia, the country Georgia, the former Soviet Union country.
Oh, really?
Georgia. Yeah. Oh. This is a reading movie, Chip. This is all in Georgian.
It is.
Yes, it is.
So is it like a Spanish Georgian? Does it have like a southern draw?
Yes. Welcome to Georgia. Have some peaches. This is the story of a young man who becomes a competitive dancer and then falls in love with another young man. This is a fine film. And Then We Danced. There is a true story made into a book, made into a movie. This is called Waiting for Anya. This features Anjelica Huston and Jean Reno. Remember Jean Reno?
Who can forget?
Oh, I love Jean Reno. I can watch him in just about anything. This is the true story of a young boy who finds a Jewish man hiding from the Nazis in World War II and finds out the story of a huge number of Jewish children who are being smuggled across the border from France to Spain.
And we should probably note that this is aimed at young people.
Yes, this is definitely something that I could see using in class for some of the perspective.
When I say a little sanitized, it's certainly a very scary situation with what's going on, but certainly aimed towards young people and helping young people understand a little bit about what the Holocaust was about.
Right, and the journey of getting away from the terrible parts of the Holocaust. This is certainly the nicer parts of that story. There is a movie called Son of a Prominent Journalist.
Steve, this takes place in Africa.
Uh-huh.
And we have some interviews, and we're still trying to figure out what exactly is this
The trailer does not really give us much of a story of what's happening here.
This is a documentary, and mm-hmm. it's very important. Yeah. So we'll just leave it there.
It seems about it. It's interesting that there's not even an IMDb listing for this one. I don't know where this one is, but I know where Brooklyn Nine-Nine is. Season 7.
I've never heard of this. What is this, Steve?
Yes, you have. I've talked about Brooklyn Nine-Nine before. This is the cop show sitcom from the same brain that brought us The Good Place, Mike Schur.
Can I see this at my local theater?
I don't go to theaters. We should stop having this podcast. This is on NBC. Now it's on NBC. It was on Fox for the first 5 seasons. Fox decided they didn't want to renew it for season 6, and the outcry was loud. Mark Hamill was one of the stars who said, no, 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 you can't cancel this show. This show is brilliant. And NBC decided to pick it up, and now they're starting season 7. This is Andy Samberg, Terry Crews, Andre Brown, and a whole cast of just brilliant comedians thinking about what would Hill Street Blues look like if it was a lot sillier.
Very silly.
It's very silly. I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I look forward to that one coming back.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. You know, Audible, the service that reads books to us, is a great way to get information.
The artificial intelligence that reads us books.
Yes, so that we have the information that we need, so that we can not worry about the artificial intelligence when it comes to crush us. Oh, wait. Was that just implied?
This is from Skynet.
Yes. Oh, boy, Skynet. I've got a Skynet t-shirt. Anyway, the book that I listened to this week, which is not technically a book, this is a radio drama called Interview with the Robot. This is written by Lee Bacon, and it's one of those free titles that Amazon and Audible gives us each month with our Audible subscription.
So this is your subscription. So if when you become a subscriber, which they give you tokens, I guess, mm-hmm. that you can use for books. Mm-hmm. You also get a whole group of material every month you can choose from.
Right.
That is no additional cost.
Right. And this is one of those. These are not always the best stories, but they're usually pretty good. This one's one of them.
And this is aimed at young people.
Yes. This is definitely a story for my students. This is the story of a 12-year-old girl who finds her way into a police station seeking protection. She very quickly in this story reveals to the detective, she tells her that she's not real. The little girl is actually a robot. She is an AI.
Her name is Pinocchio.
I think her name is Vicky, Small Wonder. Do you remember the TV show Small Wonder?
Steve, I don't watch television.
Oh, television's wonderful. You should watch more television. The story here is the idea of what our future might look like. We have the technology right now.
We can rebuild her.
We can rebuild her.
Better than before.
We have the technology
to make... I need $6 million.
It's probably more now. Think about that.
Oscar Goldstein.
Remember The Informant? How he just had line of ideas? This story is the story of the future of technology. We have the ability to do all sorts of things, and we are right around the corner from the idea of sentience of a computer, where a computer can have enough equipment to be as smart as a human.
So this story takes place on an afternoon, mm-hmm. and the AI comes in and reveals herself, and then we have a police detective interviewing her. Mm-hmm. And what are we trying to glean from this?
We're trying to solve the idea of this technology for the future. My students are going to be the architects of this technology, and the idea of, do these machines have rights is the big question of this story.
And that's a great question, because what we usually would say is if something could reason as a human, mm-hmm. like a human would reason, then it should have all the rights of a human. Mm-hmm. So if for some reason we determined that we could communicate with I don't know, dolphins.
Dolphins, which certainly are on that list of things that we think are sentient.
So would they have, if we determined that we could communicate with dolphins like we communicate with each other, should dolphins have human rights? That would be a question. So we're at using artificial intelligence, something that is not... This is Data from Star Trek.
Absolutely. This is an episode of Star Trek, the Measure of a Man episode, where they put Data on trial. Do we treat this machine as a machine, or is he something else? Does he qualify as a sentient being, and does he have different rights than your Alexa?
Yes, absolutely. I think this is a very poignant type of argument, because if something could have human rights, then do they have human responsibilities?
Do they have to pay taxes? Well, do you give a salary? When we get it to a self-driving car, will it be able to make money? And if it can make money, does it get to keep that money? Does it get to spend that money? There's a whole avenue of thought here.
Well, part of the reason why we create computers is to take over human work.
Correct.
And in fact, we're seeing that right now is with the productivity increases that we have, there is potential that your work week could be reduced.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, maybe you get more than just the summer off. But I mean, the 4-day work week is becoming a reality for some parts in some industries.
George Jetson is right around the corner. That 4-day work week is something that we have discussed as an education system.
And so, my point being is, this is not necessarily a really easy question.
No,
there's philosophy involved in it, and you know what Steve Martin said about philosophy.
Remind me.
You learn just enough of it to screw you up for the rest of your life.
There you go. That's it. That is exactly right.
So this is actually, there's a philosophical part, but then there's a very, everyday part of it. Think of the Star Wars universe where, you know, machines were not necessarily treated real well.
There is absolutely racism against droids.
I mean, they're for all intents, they're kind of slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal is they may not, well, in Star Wars universe, they do feel pain, but... The point being is, they were made to take the work of the sentient being, the biological beings.
And while we absolutely look at slavery as something that is not okay, it's not okay.
Disdain would be a good word.
To take a human and to treat them as an animal, to make the work go, the next step is that automation piece.
Well, I mean, we developed lawnmowers so that we wouldn't have to go out and mow the lawn. Mm-hmm. We've tractors and cars and all those are machines, and they were to take the labor. And what a beautiful experience that is. If they're sentient, does that mean they get a different rights? Do the cyborgs?
Uh-huh.
That was from the Caprica. They were basically taking humans and taking away their will, and then taking their consciousness and placing them in artificial beings. And that was...
Then what rights do you have?
Sure.
If you are conscious, if you have the consciousness of a human, but you're in a robot form,
And you took away your will.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right, so I've got a question for you. Did we come to a conclusion in this short story?
I don't think that there is a real strong conclusion here. I think that this is the beginning of a conversation.
This is the exploration of this idea.
And putting it into terms that my 12-year-old students can absolutely identify with, because they're going to be the ones who need to make the laws of the future, to think about these ideas and to figure out the science of where we're going with AI.
Is this where we get real bitter because we're Gen X and we'll just never have the voting block?
As usual, Gen X is just out of this conversation completely, because the boomers have their ways
and the millennials
and
have theirs.
Have their ways, and we're stuck in the middle. That is our entire generation. Yes, sir. Just get me a self-driving car. I talk to my students about this all the time. I really, truly believe that my students are the last generation of Americans to drive an automobile. I think that the self-driving car is going to be here by the time they have kids of driving age.
Will you name your car Kit?
I absolutely will name my car Kit. There's no doubt about that. I want to talk to my car. I want that automation.
Will you change your name to Michael?
No, I'll just have it call me Michael, just for fun. The Hoff.
Just for giggles.
Yes. This is a wonderful story. It's a great conversation that we are just in the beginning of. We have a lot of talk to do about AI and automation, and this is one place to start. It's called Interview with the Robot by Lee Bacon.
Scroll with it.
Sports.
That's right. Well, it's not just sports, but this is actually a statement a little bit on the trend that people are shedding cable.
The cord cutters. There's a podcast called Cord Killers where, we are leaving the idea of cable.
So Fox Sports 1, which was Fox version of like ESPN 2, that's where they would, if your game did not show up on Fox Channel over the air, it could go to Fox Sports 1. So they have inventory of basketball games and football games and all sorts of stuff. And then also NBCSN, which is, NBC's sports network. So there's
that's
hockey.
That's the one that used to be Comcast Sportsnet, but before that it was Sports Channel.
Well, they have that too.
Oh, okay.
So Comcast Sportsnet is...
I know nothing about sports, and I know almost nothing about cable. Go on.
Well, it doesn't really matter. The point being is they're under 80 million subscribers now.
Wow.
And so these are usually the add-on type channels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a whole group of, History Channel and Discovery and all that. They sort of get added on to a package. These are the sports packages that kind of get added on.
For the people who really like sports.
Yeah, and you want to see every NBA basketball game or college football game or whatever it is. These are the channels where those kind of show up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have to have enough scale to make those work. And when people are abandoning cable, this is where they start. This is the trend. And
those lower tier channels go away first.
Yeah, and this is one of those just things to kind of keep an eye on and see how this will change, because the industry is changing quickly.
Very quickly. That's the idea of Cord Killers, where Tom Merritt and Brian Brushwood talk about this week in and week out, and look at those numbers and look at how many people are leaving cable, because there are other options. The idea of the a la carte has certainly come to us, and we have all sorts of options, but those options are not cheap, but there's options.
Sure. Yeah.
Did you watch? Okay, I know you don't watch TV and you don't watch Saturday Night Live, but you know everything about Saturday Night Live. Did you see this Saturday? J.J. Watt was the host of Saturday Night Live. He's an American football player. And his opening monologue, he explained what American football was. And he said, football, that's the one with the helmets. He says, I didn't think I had to explain that, but apparently the writers know better. And they said that I had to explain what football was to everybody. I cracked up. I was like, yeah, you are playing to us. You are not supposed to be on Saturday Night Live, sir. It was good stuff. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Yes, sir. Auto show time. Let's go out to McCormick Place and look at some cars, some automation, some self-driving stuff. I am ready for my new car. Sell me a car, everybody. Give me a call. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hassenflow, car salesman.
Make you a good deal. What do I have to do to get you into this car today? We'll see you in the future.
#TMS loves you. You should probably look it up.